Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are delighted to be here at the University of Toledo College of Law for today's oral arguments. Thank you for making the effort, both to the students and your teachers and administrators, for allowing this to happen. It should be noted that our colleague, Justice Lanzinger, is a graduate of this fine law school, and we are very happy to visit her alma mater. As our viewers have probably noticed, we are not in a courtroom. We are holding oral arguments today in the Richard and Jane McQuaid Law Auditorium. The goal of the off-site court program is to teach students a little more about the judicial system. Holding court in a college campus not only makes a lot of sense, it also gives Ohio's law students an up-close look at their future. Thanks to UT College of Law Dean Daniel Steinbach for inviting the Supreme Court and for making arrangements to host the temporary court proceedings today. Thank you, Dean. Thanks as well to Lucas County Juvenile Court Judge and Toledo Bar Association President Connie Semmelman, the Bar's Executive Director Sarah Corpenny, and 6th District Court of Appeals Judge Arlene Singer for also assisting in organizing our visit. We have 3 cases on the docket today, and 11 area high schools will attend oral arguments. Welcome, students, and thank you for being here. UT law students have also been busy helping high school classes understand the legal arguments in the cases and by serving today as both greeters and ushers. We are grateful for the help in supporting the whole purpose of this program, and that's educating students about the judicial system. Thanks to everyone for their help, and in particular, thank you to the high school students and their teachers. We'll now call the first case. It's 13-890, Cedar Fair LP versus Jacob Falfus. For the appellant, we have Mr. Douglas Cole.
With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, this case asks the court to reconfirm a single basic principle of Ohio contract law. In particular, to use this court's own words, quote, it has long been settled law that a court of equity will not decree specific performance of a contract for personal services. The 6th District decision below turned that settled law on its head. According to the court, not only is specific performance an available remedy, it is the preferred remedy. That is simply wrong. The rule that specific performance will not lie for personal services contracts is not merely a rule of Ohio. It is a settled rule in the vast majority of jurisdictions across this country, and it is a staple of contracts hornbooks and contracts casebooks. It's widespread and well settled because it makes sense. Personal services contracts call for the exercise of discretionary authority. They are predicated on mutual trust. Once that trust is gone for whatever reason, the contract doesn't work for the parties nor for the public. The rule is also confirmed by basic agency principles. The notion in a personal services contract, especially such as the one here, where we're dealing with a chief operating officer, Mr. Falfus is an agent of Cedar Fair, the principal. And as this court observed in Hoffman Candy, if the relationship of principal and agent is to be of value or profit to either, it must be accompanied by mutual confidence, loyalty, and satisfaction. When these are gone and find their places taken by dislike and distrust, it is to the advantage of both principal and agent and the public that the relationship of principal and agent be severed.
Mr. Cole, what remedy would you have then, would you deem appropriate?
Well, that's a very interesting question, Your Honor, because when you say what remedy, first there's the question of what to do with the 6th District decision, and then there's also the separate question of what to do with the arbitral award. If you're asking ultimately what do we think the appropriate remedy is, here the contract specifically provides the remedy for termination other than for cause. It sets forth a remedy of the base pay, some $665,000 for the remaining term of the contract at the time it's terminated other than for cause. We think that under the plain language of that contract, that is the limit of the arbitrator's power, and that any award in excess of that would exceed the arbitrator's power and would thus be required to be vacated by court on review. I don't know that the court needs to go all the way to that. We certainly think that's what the plain language of the contract warrants. Here the question is, does the Sixth District decision declining to vacate the arbitral award, does that decision stand? And because that decision, the Sixth District's decision, rests on one proposition. It rests on the proposition that specific performance is an available remedy for personal services contracts. That's just wrong.
If we agree with you that it is wrong, what remedy, in response to the chief's question, are you suggesting? Is it the four corners of the contract, the employment contract, or do we remand this to the arbitrators with instructions or back to the appellate court? What are you asking?
Your Honor, we have asked that the court vacate the arbitral award. Now, under 2711...
Vacate the arbitration award. Where does that put the parties?
That's a difficult question. What the statute says, 2711.10 says, is that if it's been vacated and the time in which the arbitrators enter their award has not expired, it can be remanded. It doesn't say must be. It says may be remanded to the arbitral panel. So one possibility, and this is just an unsettled question about what to do when you vacate an arbitral award, but one possibility is to remand to the arbitral panel. I think the...
Counsel, let me ask you, though, I'm not following you. Are you saying that the arbitrator exceeded their authority?
I'm saying the arbitrators exceeded their power, that the parties had agreed.
Are you using the word power and authority interchangeably?
I guess I am, Your Honor. Yes, exceeding their power. They've exceeded their power under the arbitration agreement.
How?
How? By entering an award that departs from the essence of the agreement. The arbitrators selected a remedy that was not the remedy on which the parties had agreed when they signed the contract. Mr. Falfus, a very sophisticated businessman, CEO of a billion-dollar company, negotiated an employment contract that gave him a specific remedy in the event of termination other than for cause.
And that's the payment of the $660,000.
It's the payment of his base salary for the remaining unexpired term of the contract, which I believe at the time was about two and a half years.
And your best argument is that that's the extent of the authority that the arbitrators had in the event that they were found in his favor.
That's our best argument with respect to the remedy, Your Honor. I think it's clear that.
So then, are you arguing that the appellate court here misapplied Ohio law in determining specific performance was an available remedy, and therefore don't we just review the appellate court decision and not get behind it?
Your Honor, I think that's a great question, and I
well,
think
thank you.
Yeah, I think the answer is this. I think that. We look back, the Sixth District is reviewing an arbitral award, right? So we look at what the Sixth District said, and the Sixth District said the reason this arbitral award is fine is because Ohio law allows specific performance of personal services contracts. That's wrong. That's just wrong as a matter of this court's decision in Massetta and wrong as a matter of settled principles. So then the question is, what do we do when that's wrong? And I guess they could argue an alternate grounds for affirmance or something along that line, and so to take on the alternate grounds of affirmance, the basis on which the Sixth District decided it is wrong. So now what do we do with that?
Mr. Cole, though, I want to look at the Sixth District opinion, paragraph 11, where the court is saying, it's citing section 19 of the contract. And 19 of the contract talks about the panel having the authority to award any remedy or relief that an Ohio or federal court in Ohio could grant in conformity with applicable law on the basis of claims. So it's not quite that it said what you're just suggesting. It's referring to a section of the employment contract itself.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And so what 19C says is that the arbitrator's authority goes to the full extent of the authority that an Ohio judge would have. So if an Ohio judge could not order specific performance of a personal services contract, then neither could the arbitrators under 19.
Okay, so you have to take the second step, but the court is looking at the employment contract itself that talks about legal and equitable relief.
Right, but the talks about legal and equitable relief to the extent that an Ohio court would have it. And it says an Ohio court would have it because we read Massetta as limited to collective bargaining agreements involving unions. I'm sorry, collective bargaining agreements in class actions. But Massetta isn't limited that way. Massetta said, we think, it started with the fact we've got a collective bargaining agreement, and sometimes specific performance is more available with respect to collective bargaining agreements. So the court said, we've got to first decide that question. We find that employment agreements and collective bargaining agreements should both be subject to the same rule, which is no specific performance. So when the court said no specific performance for collective bargaining agreements, it wasn't limiting the rule, it was making collective bargaining agreements subject to the same rule as ordinary employment agreements.
Counsel, I'm trying to get the phrases together. You keep using specific performance. Are you using that interchangeably with reinstatement to the job?
I am, Your Honor, in the sense that specific performance is an order that the parties perform the contract. So in an employment setting, specific performance would be equivalent to reinstatement. The way the rule is generally stated in contracts, treatises, and hornbooks is that specific performance will not lie for personal services contracts. What that means is you can't order the parties to continue to perform.
But you can have personal specific performance for a wrongful termination of a contract, can you not?
You can't, Your Honor, in a personal services contract. So what we have to first look at, and
why?
Where some confusion
Wait,
arises.
Counsel, you keep saying that. Why?
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 Because this court itself has articulated the many reasons that in a personal services contract, so we're talking about contracts involving discretionary authority. We're not talking about a line worker. And I should note, we're not talking about a Title VII or an age discrimination claim where statutory remedies provide for reinstatement. We're talking about basic common law principles. And you go back to first year contracts courses in law school, they teach you that where it's a personal services contract that turns on the unique attributes of the person you've hired. You hire someone to paint a portrait. You decide, I don't want this person to paint a portrait anymore. All right, that isn't going to be specifically performed. Person may have some reliance damages, person may have access to other things, but we don't require specific performance.
Why do we have to go that far in this case? I mean, I know your position is we have to look at Massetta. Massetta said no specific performance on a personal services contract. Why couldn't you also win another way? And the other way would be if you look at this contract doesn't, this is not the remedy that this contract provided for. Isn't that enough to get you where you want to be?
Your Honor, it is, and the court may recall in our jury mem, there were three props of law. The one the court granted was the one that dealt with personal services contracts and specific performance, so we felt limited to by the court's action. We did think that under the express language of this contract, that Section 7 or Paragraph 7 provides the exclusive remedy in the event of termination other than for cause. I'm sorry.
What do you do with the language or with the reasoning that the U.S. Supreme Court uses in the Oxford Health Plans versus Sutter case where, you know, basically you sign up for arbitration, you live and die by what that arbitrator decides. Even if the arbitrators just make a mistake of law, you have to live with that.
Absolutely, Your Honor. We embrace the decision in Sutter. And the quote that I think is important is, on route to its decision, it says, if the arbitrator acts outside the scope of his contractually delegated authority, issuing an award that simply reflects his own notions of economic justice rather than drawing its essence from the contract. And drawing its essence is exactly the language that the courts of Ohio use in deciding what is exceeding their power. The question, as this court has said for presciently, right, since 1991 or even earlier, some 20 years before Sutter gets decided, this court has been talking about whether or not an arbitrator's award, quote, draws its essence from the contract. And they have used that language to define what exceeding their powers means. And what the court has said is an award does not draw its essence from the contract if it's in conflict with the express provisions or if it's not rationally related to what the contract provides.
Counsel, doesn't that get you back to Justice O'Donnell's first question? What do you want?
Well, Your Honor, and again,
perfect world. You're living in a perfect world right now.
In a perfect world right now, we think that the arbitral award should be vacated, and then either the court below should enter the correct award, which is under paragraph 7, or I guess it could be remanded to arbitration. But I think perfect world, we look at Short versus Title Resources, which is the supplemental authority that we filed about a week ago. And in that case, almost spot on factually, 8th District decision, senior VP of a company is terminated by the company.
You're running out of time, counsel. What's your perfect world?
Perfect world is that we get what the parties bargained for in paragraph 7,
which is what?
Base pay for the remaining term of the contract plus medical and dental benefits and nothing else. No.
So did your client tender the check for $600,000 when they terminated him? How did you end up in arbitration? if you said, here, under the contract, we owe you $600,000 and your dental is taken care of and all those things, how'd you end up in arbitration?
We ended up in arbitration because our view was that Mr. Falfus had resigned, and so that provides different benefits than termination.
Oh, so you weren't ready to pay him $600,000. Today you are, but then you weren't.
We believe that Mr. Falfus had resigned from his position, and that's a factual dispute that we lost.
Would that be a fair statement? Back then, you said, "See ya. You resigned," and now you're saying, we owe him $600,000, end of case.
It's more than $600,000.
Whatever it is.
But yes, we're saying that we've lost that factual dispute. We still believe that he resigned, but we lost that factual dispute.
And that's
not
before us, and you're not asking us to remand to the arbitral panel to relitigate that.
We think that arbitration is arbitration. That's been decided. We lost, and so we live with that.
Only remedy is, does he get the cash in hand, or does he get reinstated?
Well, they've asked for all kinds of other remedies, Your Honor, in addition, but right, we believe that the correct remedy is the remedy. It's undisputed that the employment relationship was severed in 2010. So it was either a resignation or it was a termination other than for cause. We've never argued it was a termination for cause. He clearly didn't die, and we didn't allege disability, so that's the only ways under the contract that the employment relationship can be severed. It was severed. The arbitrator found it was termination rather than resignation. All right, then the arbitrator is limited. The parties get expressly what they bargain for, and that's what the arbitrator has to provide, which is the remedy under paragraph 7 of the arbitration agreement. Any other result leads to people being unwilling to go to arbitration because there'll be, no telling what an arbitrator might do if they can depart
from the contract. And when you say expressly what you bargain for, you refer back to the paragraph?
Paragraph 7, explicitly what he bargained for.
And paragraph 11 of the Court of Appeals opinion, where it refers to that, what he bargained for was he is supposed to know or presumed to know that under Ohio law you can't get specific performance. That's part of the bargain, even though that's not spelled out in the...
It is spelled out, the remedy he gets for termination other than for cause, and the limits in the contract were there, and he obviously had advice from counsel.
Why would they have those limits in the contract that results in the dollar amount plus the meds plus et cetera? Why would that be in there? When would that be used if not in this situation?
Absolutely correct, Your Honor. That's precisely what that language was for, is for when there's a termination other than for cause. Everybody recognized that they might terminate. He recognized he might be terminated other
than
for cause.
After 39 years.
Your Honor, yes, he was a long-term employee of Cedar Fair. He was terminated other than for cause. And that's what the arbitrator found. And then the arbitrator went on and said, but I'm going to exercise my equitable authority to order specific performance. And that was equitable authority he simply didn't have.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Panza.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Richard Panza. I represent Mr. Falfus. I have with me at the trial table, Mr. Colas, and I have behind me Mr. and Mrs. Falfus.
Can you answer the question that I just posed?
If you would repeat it, I'll be glad to answer it.
Why have this formula, why have this in the contract, the 600,000 plus the meds?
The answer is easy. If the employee is terminated for cause or without cause, the contract applies. That's inapplicable in this situation. It's not relevant in this situation.
Why not?
Because the arbitrators found the contract was breached. There was a breach of contract. He wasn't terminated pursuant to the terms of contract, pursuant to the terms of the employment agreement. The case that Mr. Cole just cited you, the short case, is a case where the individual was terminated. And so the only issue was whether he was terminated with or without cause. Jack Falfus was not terminated pursuant to the terms of the contract. Mr. Cole has forgotten to inform the court that immediately preceding the arbitrator's statement of termination was the statement that Cedar Fair breached the conditions of good faith and fair dealing and breached the contract. They were in breach of the contract. Mr. Falfus hasn't received a nickel in termination pay for the last 4 years.
What do you determine the remedy for the breach, then? in your view?
It's not my view. I believe the contract, the evidence was reviewed by the arbitrators, the law was submitted to the arbitrators, and the arbitrators reinstated Mr. Falfus, and they reinstated him with back pay and benefits as if his contract had not been breached. Now I think it's very important because we're really mixing a number of issues here. First, let me say, for the last 11 minutes.
Is this a personal services contract?
It is a personal service contract.
In your view, it is.
It is. And so, just like Worrell was a personal service contract.
And
just
does,
like, just like
does
Worrell,
Ohio provide specific performance for termination of personal service contracts?
Sure. Justice Moyer said it was the preferred remedy in the case called Worrell versus Multipress, 1989, 35 years after Massetta. And of course, that is the case that we cited to the arbitrators in 2011. And let me point out to you at that time.
Counsel, before you go down that line, please address what your opposing counsel is saying. He is asking this court to adopt the philosophy that this arbitration panel exceeded their authority when they ordered reinstatement.
That's right. And for this, and for this court to agree with that principle would destroy 40 years of arbitration law in the state of Ohio. 40 years of arbitration law. It would wreak havoc with arbitration law. Justice French, you posed the question about Section 7. With all due respect, when Jack Falfus gave up his rights of judicial redress, he did it for the analysis of the arbitrators. Not, and I mean no disrespect for this to this court. It is the arbitrators who became the final and binding individuals to interpret the contract. Section 19 is very expansive. It gives the arbitrators the authority to award any remedy any court in Ohio could award. The fact that that may or may not be in conflict with Section 7, the arbitrators took into consideration, and they evaluated the situation. And that evaluation was, even the trial court agreed with that evaluation. The Court of Appeals agreed with that evaluation. The ability to analyze the contract is a principle which goes back to the Goodyear case in 1975. For this court to take over that interpretation would absolutely destroy arbitration, as the United States Supreme Court said, as a effective means of resolving disputes straight away. We can all agree that that has not occurred in this case after 4 years.
But the personal service contract assumes that the parties wish to continue the relationship and they're voluntarily, the idea of a contract, mutual agreement.
Yes. Yes.
Here, if you're saying that a preferred remedy for a breakdown in that is to basically force a shotgun marriage,
you're
saying specific
Justice
performance.
Justice Lanziger, that's not the evidence.
All right, what are you saying then?
What I'm saying is the arbitrators were the determiners. They heard 2 days of evidence. They were the ones to determine, number one, was an adequate remedy at law. Could, in fact, the parties get together? If you examine the evidence, we're talking a man who 3 days before was recommended to be president of Cedar Fair. There is no evidence in the record that the parties could not get together, that, in fact, there wouldn't be a harmonious relationship. So if, in fact, we are to view the evidence in the vacuum, as we must, we must presume that the arbitrators of the fact and the law made the determination that, in fact, these parties could, in fact, continue. And if you look at the evidence, if you look at the evidence, I'm sorry, Justice French.
Isn't there a new CEO now, though?
Well, sure.
There's another one.
But there wasn't at the time of the arbitration. At the time of the arbitration and reinstatement, there was no chief operational officer. So, in fact, are you telling me Mr. Falfus should suffer because Cedar Fair ignored the arbitration award? I would tend to think that would be immensely unfair.
But counsel, doesn't that go to the fundamental question before this court? You have an employer who is represented by that table over there saying they don't want him as president or COO, or we wouldn't be here today, would we?
I agree with you. You're absolutely correct.
So therefore, aren't you limited when the arbitrators said you get back pay?
No.
And you get the terms of the contract, which I presume would then therefore mean you'll be paid for the rest of the contract, another 2.5 years, but you're not coming home.
No, what they want now is totally irrelevant to the record. Absolutely irrelevant to the record, what they want now.
Well, is what you want now irrelevant to the record?
I'm sorry?
Is what you want now irrelevant to the record?
No, Justice O'Donnell, because what I want now is absolutely supported by the law.
Well, if we would
And what they want, what they want now is not supported by
the law. Could you listen to the question and stop talking over the other justices, please?
Yes, Your Honor.
If we would order specific performance and have your client reinstated to that position, you believe that it would become a harmonious relationship with the administration at Cedar Fair? Is that what you're arguing?
What I'm arguing is my feelings on the matter are irrelevant, number one. And what I'm arguing is that there is no evidence in the record to suggest otherwise. In fact, the evidence in the record suggests that, in fact, they are qualified, he could get along, and he's ready, willing, and able to perform his duty.
Well, wasn't there, there was a term to this employment, was there not?
There was a 3-year rolling contract.
Okay, and he had, what, 2.5 years left?
Yes, sir.
So that time has now expired.
And he's into a new term. He's into a new 3-year term. He had 39 years of
Automatically?
Yes, automatically renews.
Unless what happens?
Unless 96 months notice of termination.
Okay, so is that the breach here, that there wasn't a 6-month notice of termination? Because I'm trying to find out, he was, the according to the appellate decision, he was terminated other than cause,
right.
Other than for cause.
Right.
But the contract deals with that. The contract doesn't say you can only be terminated for cause?
That's not what the Court of Appeals opinion said. The Court of Appeals opinion said the contract was breached, and as a result of the breach of contract, he was terminated. There is a distinct difference.
Well, counsel, and this is where we had an earlier discussion with the students about the law and applying the law. Well, the problem is here the law, as you would have us apply it, leads to an impractical situation. The term is up. We can't really unring that bell, but you would have us interpret this so that because he wasn't given the 6-month notice, a new term started and he's in the middle of a new term and we should put him back by our decision into the management of Cedar Fair when he's been out wrongfully, if we accept your view of that. But he's been gone now for how many years?
4 years.
Okay. Doesn't that seem just pretty impractical in the real world?
It seems incredibly unfair otherwise. My client should suffer because Cedar Fair has refused to honor the very arbitration agreement they
but
signed.
But that's the challenge of working with the law. You're articulating an unfairness and a reward to people who wrongfully terminated him and didn't tender a check back then. And now seem to be willing to, but back then they're saying, no, we don't owe you anything. And you would solve that problem by saying, let's inject this man into the management of a company that has clearly moved on. So the fairness and the equity and the law all seem to be on a collision course here.
Justice Pfeiffer, I apologize if I'm, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're fine. You can talk over me whenever you want to.
He's different.
Believe me, Justice, I just figured that out. But What we seem to be ignoring here is the arbitration process itself. The arbitration process, and by the way, it's very confusing because where I'm standing, the court has not accepted issues 2 and 3, which are the very issues the other side is arguing. The only issue this court has accepted for jurisdiction.
Well, I assure you, I didn't do that. I always vote to take it all in.
I read the order, Justice Pfeiffer, believe me. I'm just making a point.
Yeah.
But what's at stake here is the arbitration process.
Again, and I understand that, and you're correct. This court has a long history of saying we respect arbitration, and arbitration is to, when parties want to agree to that, is to be given
measure of enforcement. If I just may finish, this entire case went off track at the Erie County Court of Common Pleas because what the courts can do and what the courts cannot do is in such a state of flux. You really need 3 cases to decide this case. You need Goodyear, you need Hall Street in 2008, the United States Supreme Court, and you need Oxford Health versus Sutter. Those are the cases. What's at stake here is a clear, precise statement from this court that when you go to arbitration, good, bad, or ugly, you get what you bargain for. The arbitrators did not exceed their authority here. They had an authority to award any remedy any court in Ohio could award. If you read Worrell, Justice Moyer says it is the preferred remedy. That is why the Sixth District Court of Appeals cited Worrell. No one, Cedar Fair did not cite the Maceda case. The Cedar Fair did not argue at the arbitration that the arbitrators could not reinstate.
Counsel, so the arbitrators... Is there a way out of this that would allow us to respect all the law on arbitration and still not put him back in his job but give him the opportunity to seek damages over and above what the contract called for, if he could persuade the arbitrators of that?
If you don't reinstate, there is going to be considerable confusion in the lower court concerning back pay and benefits. There's going to be a tremendous argument concerning how long that term goes, what he receives, whether or not he should receive it. The arbitration award was very pure. It was very simple. It was very direct.
But counsel, I think what you're ignoring here, though, is Justice Pfeiffer's plea to look for how do we resolve this case while preserving the law. And I guess I'd like to hear your thoughts on your opposing counsel's suggestion. If they had hired an artist halfway through the painting, they can say you're fired. But the artist would say, well, that's fine, but you're still going to pay me the full terms of the contract.
Well, of course, I'm here arguing on behalf of my client, saying the only way to preserve arbitration is to honor the arbitration. I don't think there's any mid-ground. And I appreciate the fact that this is the highest court in the state of Ohio and it can fashion any remedy it so chooses. But I caution you that in doing so, the entire arbitration process is at stake.
There was a dispute about whether the Cedar Fair had terminated the contract or whether your client resigned.
That was the dispute.
Okay. And the arbitrators determined that the contract had been breached. What was the breach?
Breach of good faith and fair dealing.
In what respect?
In the respect that my client didn't resign and that there was no evidence of resignation.
So the breach was that Cedar Fair terminated his employment.
Yeah.
Without 6 months' notice. Could they have terminated his employment with 6 months' notice?
They could terminate his employment with 30 days' notice if they chose to do so under the contract, which they did not.
So you're talking about the three-year term.
The three-year term doesn't renew unless there's 6 months' notice. Okay. But there was a termination provision that the contract could have been terminated within 30 days, I suspect.
So was the breach that there was a termination without the 30-day notice?
No, there was a breach in that there was no termination under the contract. There was no termination under the contract.
Do you agree that your client could be terminated without cause?
Absolutely.
Was he told not to come to work?
In the middle of the contract. In the middle of the contract.
Sure, if they had so chosen.
If they gave him 30 days notice.
Whatever the notice was under the contract, sure.
Okay. So what I see the breach here is that they terminated him with a phone call and he was to leave on that same day, not to return, and there was no 30 days or 6 months or whatever the contract provides for with regards to notice. Is that a correct observation?
No.
All right, correct me then.
There was no termination under the contract. They didn't terminate him under the contract. They didn't pay him a nickel. They for 3 years they fought that they didn't owe him a nickel, that in fact he had resigned. That was the whole point. That is what the arbitrators determined when they analyzed the contract.
And they said he did not resign.
No.
Okay.
They said he did not resign.
All right.
He said he did not resign.
Then they found it. Nobody has found that he has resigned.
Right.
So the fact that they terminated him without cause then, how does that play into what you're left with when you take the resignation argument off the table?
It's very clear. He's entitled to reinstatement and he's entitled to back pay and benefits as a result of the breach. It's a breach of contract.
For them to suggest that he resigned is a breach of good faith because there was no underpinnings, no facts that would support that in any way.
Right.
And so that's what you're saying, because they alleged it was a resignation, because that's the position they held, that was a breach of the contract to then put the contract aside for any other reason to discharge him.
That's what the arbitrators found, a breach of contract of good faith and fair dealing.
If the remedies under paragraph 7 had been offered immediately upon the notice of termination, if paragraph 7 had been offered immediately, would you be arguing that there was a breach of contract?
You're saying if in fact he had been terminated for without cause at that time?
Right.
Well, of course not.
That's what we're trying to get to. What you're arguing is the breach of contract. And so it seems to me you're saying that the breach of contract is when they gave him notice, they didn't also give him the remedies under 7.
No, they wouldn't let him. Breach of contract is they wouldn't let him come back to work. They didn't terminate him under the contract. They didn't pay him anything under the contract. They said he resigned. He said he didn't resign after 39 years of employment. That was what the dispute was about. Throughout the arbitration, we argued it was a breach of contract, that he was entitled to reinstatement, that he was the next president and chief operational officer of Cedar Fair. The arbitrators agreed with us. The arbitrators found that pursuant to the terms of the contract had been breached. The issue of good faith and fair dealing. We argued that from the beginning throughout and at the end of arbitration.
Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to respond to your question first very briefly. You ask what the breach is. I think that's a great question. The way it's described in Mr. Falfus's brief appears at page 16. He says that the breach of good faith and fair dealing was in manipulating the resignation and constructively discharging Mr. Falfus. So again, the breach is discharge. The breach is terminating his employment. It's severing the employment relationship. The contract expressly addresses what you get if the employment relationship is severed other than for cause.
And you agree that there is a notice requirement?
The only notice requirement, Your Honor, is at the end of the 3-year term.
A 6-month intent not to renew.
With respect to termination other than for cause, there is no notice period. It can happen immediately, just like a resignation can happen immediately. That the contract doesn't provide any need for advance notice of a termination other than for cause.
So, counsel, the bottom line is, did you fire him? Did your clients fire him?
The arbitrators found that we fired him, and we are not challenging that factual finding, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decisions.